Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Final inspection. Final inspection. Now, Dennis Michelson of D-Mike Media is here to give us the inside track on NASCAR and the world of short track racing.
Like this song.
I like it too, yeah. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary, the great Great Lakes Dragway.
Absolutely. Get your 2019 season passes now. Affordable and awesome.
And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is from Danville, Illinois, Dennis Michelson. Dennis, welcome to the show, sir.
Mr. Steve, it is great to be back for another season here on the Final Inspection.
And I would be remiss to not mention two of the greatest drivers to come from Danville. That would be Larry Boom Boom Cannon and his brother Steve.
Well, we've got another pretty good one now. Of course, he's from Oakwood, which is just down the block. But Bobby Pierce, who's one of the best short track racers, and we saw him at the Eldora truck race a few years ago, really making a scene. Bobby Pierce is from this area as well.
He is a good shoe, especially in the late model dirt series. So. Very good, Dennis. And so when you saw the number six kind of sliding down the backstretch at Daytona, did you go, oh, Stenhouse is in trouble?
No, I'm even worse than that. I'm going, my goodness, Mark Martin, you're off to a bad start to the season.
Yeah, well, that was because Viagra wasn't on the hood of the car still, you know? He could have kept it going straight if that was the case.
Whenever I see the six, I'm expecting to see the Valvoline colors. You know, I'm old school, but now I'm having a little trouble. I guess there's like 17 different driver and crew chief changes this year. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Now you can't even find a good scorecard because Jaski's missing in action. Yep. I mean, it is getting bad around here for NASCAR fans, you know, but, I will say this one thing that I do want to pass along. I was so thankful because, you know, we're in the media, but we're fans. We're not kidding each other. We're not journalists. We're fans. And when I saw Mr. Bob Pockrass get signed by Fox Sports, I was like, thank goodness, because he's one that covers this this sport so great. And I hated to see, with ESPN doing all their cuts, that Mr. Pockrass is going to be with us for another season.
That is certainly good news. Speaking of drivers, I guess we should just go right down the line here. The big one, of course, is the 78 car is gone, Martin Truex, and this one we knew about last year, but, of course, moving to the 19 car of Joe Gibbs Racing. So what do you think that 19 car hits the ground running with Truex? I think they should, right?
I actually think that Martin Truex Jr. should be better this year, and the main reason is the last couple of seasons of this, you know, Toyota exchange of information between the 78 car and the Joe Gibbs Racing cars, it stopped being as fluid as it had been at the beginning of that relationship. So a lot of the key players from that 78 team, including his crew chief Cole Pern and also his car chief, came over, and one of his head engineers came over, and now they're going to be sharing data and making sure they're getting all the information that all the Toyota teams are getting. So I would expect, if anything, that he's going to have a better season this year.
Well, the reason it stopped being so fluid is because the 78 was whooping their behinds. And, you know, Joe Gibbs treated Furniture Row like a redheaded stepchild. And so I think you're right. I think hopefully he goes in, you know, and is looked upon as equal footing as the other teams and not the quote-unquote new guy because, you know, Furniture Row was they were having their way with Gibbs there for a long time.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing the amount of talent that Joe Gibbs Racing has over there. But when you kind of look at their driver lineup and you figure maybe a Denny Hamlin is the third best driver at his own team now, that's pretty incredible. And it's kind of going to be 1 and 1A between Truex Jr. and Kyle Busch, I think.
That's a good point. Moving forward, I forgot Bubby Jones from Danville, Illinois. Great USAC sprint car driver, still around.
Bubby.
Still in the Indianapolis area. I see him once in a while at lunch.
Nice.
Good guy, in or out and about. It's the 31. Ryan Newman, of course, we mentioned this before, moves to the number 6 car, vacated by actually Trevor Bayne, not actually Ricky Stenhouse.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting move. Ryan Newman got a lot out of that 31 car the last couple of years. I don't think there's any question that Richard Childress Racing, except that the restrictor plate track, is not fielding equipment that was as good as the Toyota teams for sure, or some of the top Ford teams. So you put Ryan Newman in a situation where, you know, Trevor Bayne, I hated to see him go. He's a good kid and all that kind of stuff, but he just has been underproducing. But so has Roush Fenway Racing. It's been, you know, a long time since they've had a driver over there. Been like 4 or 5 years since Greg Biffle was over there and running in the chase, since they've had a real legitimate contender. I mean, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. has been okay, but have we looked at him as a threat to win every week? I really expect some good things out of Ryan Newman, but I still don't think that Roush Fenway team will be nearly as strong as it could be. Otherwise, heck, Fenway, you know, they would have signed Craig Kimbrell for the Boston Red Sox, so they can't afford all that money. They're certainly not going to spend it on the racing team, you know, going forward here if they can't afford a relief pitcher for the Bo Sox.
And this is a kind of interesting situation. Late last year, you had Matt DiBenedetto in the 32 saying, I'm stepping away from the car. I want to be a free agent. I want to see what offers I can get. So he's in the 95. That was, of course, last year raced by Casey Kane. And, you know, some people maybe go, oh, yeah, okay, well, good move by him, 95. And I said this last year. I said, you know, that 95 car is better and is making increments. I thought they would make a bigger step last year with Casey Kane. Now you wonder with his health issues and whatnot, maybe he wasn't getting all, you know, they weren't getting the performance maybe they were getting. Who knows? But Matt, you know, he has a lot of respect in the garage. He's I think, a better driver than the general public may think he is, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is. And if you look at that 95 car traditionally back a few years when Michael McDowell was running it, and then last year with Casey Kane, and now with Guido, they call him, because nobody can get DiBenedetto right. But when you look at that car, it's always been good at the restrictor plate track. I kind of expect them to be a sleeper for a top 10 finish here at the restrictor plate tracks again this year, because old Guido's got a pretty good rating at Daytona considering how bad the equipment he's been driving. Mm-hmm. This is a step up, but there is such a have and have nots. There's such a split between the top teams and then the other guys in NASCAR, except for the restrictor plate tracks. I don't think you're going to see him compete, although looking at the test that they did out in Vegas with this new rule package for the intermediate tracks, it looked a lot like a restrictor plate racing. So I'm kind of wondering if this season at the intermediate tracks, we're going to see some of the Levine family racing and some of the other second tier teams do quite well.
And you have, of course, the 41 with Kyle Busch moving over to the number one, Kurt Busch, moving on over to the one, just peeling off that four.
Yeah, they had to move points around and everything else to make room in the end. But, yeah, it's it is crazy. I mean, we're going to watch the first couple of races here, and we're not going to be sure who's racing what. It's going to be really weird trying to get used to all these new guys and new numbers.
And then Corey LaJoy, I mean, going from TriStar over to the 32, which Matt DiBenedetto was in, it'll be interesting to see how much bench sheet metal that car gets this year.
It's going to be a bunch.
And it's going to get some problems maybe with his facial features. Did you see the card that they're bringing to Daytona?
Oh,
it's
is
got
it?
His
yes.
face on it. And the cool thing is when they were getting ready to put it in the trailer and they were taking pictures of it, one of the crew guys used some white tape to give him like buck teeth. It was hilarious. but yeah, that team is another one of these teams that has been sort of outproducing their budgets in the past. I mean, I don't expect great things out of them, but with this new rule package that NASCAR has put in and taking more power away from the engines, maybe we're going to see some of these upstarts get lucky at a few of these races, just like they do at the restrictor plate. So this is going to be a crazy season, and then it's going to be amazing to see what happens in Victory Lane starting next week for the Daytona 500, because this new, hey, we're going to really DQ the winner and take a win away, that's something NASCAR hasn't done in decades.
Many years. In fact, let's
Before we get to that one, Dennis, the last one, number 19, Daniel Suarez, he goes to the 41 for Stuart Haas, replacing Kurt Busch. Do you expect Suarez to have a better season this year than he did last season?
No, I don't. Daniel Suarez is a very talented driver at the Xfinity level, but he has been a great example of how big of a jump it is from Xfinity to Cup. I don't expect anything more than what we saw out of him the last couple of years.
Fair enough.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll talk about disqualifications and more in the world of NASCAR when we return after this break. You're listening to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
Final Inspection.
Final Inspection.
Now, Dennis Michelson of D-Mike Media is here to give us the inside track on NASCAR and the world of short track racing.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Dennis Michelson. And Dennis, big change coming up in NASCAR for this year, and that is that NASCAR will disqualify winners for failing post-race inspection at the track. And before we jump into that, I want to kind of give a background on this. This goes back many, many, many years ago to Big Bill France Sr., who in the past had a policy of which when he said, when the fans go see the race on Sunday, I don't want them to read on Monday that instead of Junior Johnson, you know, they saw Junior Johnson win, and then on Monday they read it was actually Rex White or Lee Petty or whoever actually was the winner. He wanted the fans, when they left the track, to know that the guy they saw winning was actually the winner. And there's been a big change in that, hasn't there?
Yeah, and it's actually quite ironic that he would say that, because he milked the very first Daytona 500 race on the Speedway. He milked that photo finish for like 3 days or 4 days to make sure it was in the sports stories the whole time before he officially declared a winner. So I always thought that was kind of funny. And the very first strictly stock race back in 1949, the guy was disqualified for having non-stock springs in the car. So this was originally a NASCAR goal, changed, you know, towards the last few years, I guess, that Big Bill France Sr. was in charge. Bill France Jr. continued that trend, and it's been that way ever since, that we haven't heard about a DQ or even a penalty until Wednesday after the race, because lately they've been taking the cars back to R&D. Now NASCAR is telling us that they will have a decision on whether a car was legal or not in 90 minutes after the race. And if the top team is disqualified, then they go to the second place car. If he fails inspection, they'll go to the third, and so on until they declare a winner. So 90 minutes or so after the race, we'll know whether the second place team is going to be the winner instead. And then, you know, my big concern is, will they find something that they're not sure of and have to still take something back to R&D? NASCAR always sets up these rules, but I don't think they think through the worst-case scenarios.
Right, and there's been a couple situations where, I want to say 1960, Richard Petty won his first race up at Toronto, and he was protested. And the person who protested his win was his father, Lee, and it was actually taken away from him. So you got Richard Petty marching past 50 wins, past 100 wins, up past 150 wins, and he's approaching 200 wins. And, you know, this scenario was brought up of how ironic it would be if he hit 199, and the reason why he doesn't hit 200 was because of Lee protesting his first win. Well, and then a situation occurred in the early 80s at Charlotte when he had a massive oversized engine and won the, I think it was then the National 500, if I recall what right, in 83. It wasn't with Petty Motorsports, though. I think it was when he was racing for Mike Curb. And that was his 198th win, I believe, or 199th, right around there. And they gave him the win because, well, it's Richard Petty, and we want him to hit 200. So I thought that was interesting. And it's funny how you mentioned that, you know, we'll go to the next guy and then the next guy. That actually occurred in qualifying at Daytona in 1976. It was, I want to say, Darrell Waltrip, A.J. Foyt, and Dave Marcus, maybe it was. And it was they got disqualified. So your front row of the 1976 Daytona 500 was two guys from Iowa, Ramos Stott and Terry Ryan. So I always thought that was kind of interesting. It should be interesting to see how this develops over the year, this coming year, Dennis.
Yeah, and they're also getting out ahead of this because as soon as they announced this, my first thought was, hey, everybody is going to stuff it into the wall while they're doing their post-race burnouts, and then they'll have an excuse if something's a little off kilter. Now NASCAR is saying that they might implement a new process that will not allow burnouts after the race. So everything that they're trying to think of, they're going to have to get out ahead of these crew chiefs. I think it's a good idea in practice. It's no different, though, than like the World of Outlaws. You go across the scales. If it's legal going across the scales, you get the win. If it's not, you get DQ'd. This is sort of the NASCAR version of this because there's a few more things that they have to check. But, again, I think they've been a little too stringent in post-race tech lately. Some of the things that they have caught, it's like, why didn't you catch these things in pre-race? And some of the other things were clearly because of damaged cars, like when Clint Bowyer years ago got nailed and it almost cost him a trip to the playoffs. So there's a lot of different things that have been done over the years where, if it's because of damage, I'm not so sure that car is supposed to be 100% legal because it's not in the pristine shape it was before the 500-mile race.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do about post-race burnouts, too. I mean, if you want to, get away with something on your quarter panels, well, just burn them off when you do your burnouts, right?
Yeah, and famously, they, remember there was the tape that they caught pre-race at Talladega one year where, the crew chief for Jimmy Johnson told him, hey, if you win it, back it into the wall. Nobody was sure whether he was joking or not, but, all it takes is a very little minute change that you can make to the car, and all of a sudden, it doesn't pass post-race tech. It's going to be interesting to see how they implement this, and I am betting that very quickly into the season, we'll see this 90-minute goal be blown away. It'll end up being about 3 hours.
Well, fans of the Milwaukee Mile may remember there was a situation in 1983 where this happened, and this is where, you know, where sanctioning bodies can get themselves in trouble. Tom Sneva had won the Dana 150 kart race at Milwaukee, IndyCar race, and they went into victory lane, and everybody was standing up on the side pods and that, and so when they measured them, they were too low. And everybody's saying, well, we had, you know, like literally 10 people on the car after the race in victory lane. You know, this is ridiculous. And they had to go through. So they, you know, they had actually took the race from him and gave it to Al Unser, who was in second place. And then, you know, and then they had, they had the little tribunal and everything, and they gave it back to Sneva. But, you know, it's nobody wants to read about, you know, who the race winner was, you know, 3 months later, like they did with Indianapolis in 1981. So, you know, NASCAR, I understand what they're trying to do here, but like you were saying, that you can also, it's a slippery road you can get into where if you're checking things so closely, you know, are you going to be disqualifying, you know, first, second, third, fourth, and are we going to see somebody like Matt DiBenedetto win a race here just because the first five cars were disqualified?
Yeah, it could get crazy. And when it comes to NASCAR crew chiefs, all of this is being implemented, of course, because the crew chiefs have been very creative in what they've been doing, and none of the penalties have worked so far. So, you know, this is NASCAR's next attempt to stop it.
All right, Dennis, thank you for joining us. And we'll actually, as the, you know, the Midwest season, the short track season gets going, we'll actually talk more about the short track racing. Right now it's primarily down south, you know, with the Snowball Derby. And, of course, we had the Chili Bowl a couple weeks ago. And we'll certainly chat when we have more time about what's going on in the world of short track racing, Dennis.
Yeah, and Milwaukee's got one of their very own that's going to be a hot name in the business, Sam Mayer, whose dad raced IndyCar back in the day. Sam Mayer is going to be one of the stories that we're covering all season long out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in a great driver development program. This kid is likely to be like the next Derek Jones.
All right. It'll be interesting to follow his story, and we'll certainly appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll chat next week.
Sounds good, Z-Man.
All right, thank you. That's Dennis Michelson. Make sure to check out his stuff at D-Mike Media. And when we come back, we'll be talking with David Land from YouTube on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.